I'm Jackie Pierre.
I'm Joseph Flunter.
And we're two peas in a podcast at thecommentary.ca for Monday, March 13th, 2017.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I guess everybody on Friday and throughout the weekend has been talking about this video that went viral of the dad. He's a professor, a poli-sci professor in South Korea, and I guess there's a political development there, and so the BBC wanted to interview him, and so they interview him by Skype. You've seen the video, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hilarious. And so the for people who haven't seen it, we'll set it up. It's the dad is talking on Skype in this bedroom. You can see the bed there, and you can see the bookshelves. And as he's talking, he's the other thing that was kind of weird, too, he's in a suit. You know, he's like in a coat and tie.
Yeah, he's, like, dressed up.
Yeah.
Well, he is on TV.
So yeah, but I mean, you know, you can also see a bed there, so it looks kind of weird, right? And out of nowhere, his daughter marches in, you know, and then right after the kid in the... What's that thing that the kid's sitting in so that it teaches him how to walk? What is it? That's not a walker, is it?
I forget what they're called. Yeah. Not a bouncer.
Yeah, but I mean...
It's been too long for
me. But so the kid's sitting in there, but the kid can use its feet and then follows the sister as she's walking in. And then he sort of... the guy in London has to tell him, your kids have just walked in. And then I guess he sort of shooes them away. And then the mom comes in, grabs them. And then it's actually funny watching them because then I guess they're screaming at the same time. Yeah, they're crying because they want to be with their dad.
Of course.
And then she's closing the door behind him, you know, trying to not be seen.
Frantically.
But she's seen throughout. So, you know, the one thing that I thought was the dad, because he sort of shooed her away, the dad should have picked her up and then put her in his lap. You remember Dr. Art Hister?
Yes, I know. Dr. Art Hister.
Yeah, he did that on Global. His granddaughter walked in one time while he was doing a Skype thing, and he put the daughter in his lap and drew less attention than I think, you know, this whole thing has, right?
Well, it's just, it's hilarious because I know what that's like. I know that feeling all too well. But, of course, our show is on the radio or...
Yeah, so you're not, you know, I can't see anything. People can't see what's going on.
People can't see that, but if they could, there would be a whole lot of that going on in most of my recordings.
But the dad did look kind of dismissive and unfriendly, didn't he?
Because that's the typical, number one key of being a parent is, and I think I said this to you earlier, is you have to really learn how to ignore them. Like, it's basically just not giving them any attention, because once you acknowledge their presence, it's a show for them.
Really?
It really is.
Yeah, I mean, as a viewer, I thought it was kind of mean, you know, and I thought the best thing, pick her up, put her there, and then, you know.
Well, no, because they need to know this is not, and they know this, too. I'm sure they realize that, you know, Daddy has the door closed, he's probably doing his work. And, you know, you saw how she came prancing in, and she was putting
she looked
on
like
a show.
The coolest kid in town, right?
Well, yeah, of course.
Just marching with her arms out, right?
Yeah,
dancing it almost.
You know, so you can't acknowledge them, because as soon as you acknowledge them, they think it's their time to shine. The spotlight's on.
Yeah.
So I get it. It's like, even if it's a scolding, no kind of acknowledgement can be done.
Yeah, so it seems that they live in South Korea, and he regularly Skypes to his parents, so the children's grandparents, and so they just thought, you know, because they were hearing voices from the computer, that it was grandpa, and that's why they came in, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the other funny thing that came out of all of this is that, I mean, because I saw that Friday morning. A few hours later, there were, you know, pieces about how a lot of people were automatically racist in that saying that the woman who grabbed the kids and took them out of the room was their nanny, because she was Asian and this guy's white. Did you see some of that online?
I didn't, because you know what? I've I've lately been trying to stay away from the comment section.
Yeah.
Comments and anything, because people are just absolute fools.
Yeah.
And it makes me question society.
Well, the best response I saw was from Roxane Gay, who is a terrific writer. And she wrote the book Bad Feminist, and she wrote, today one of the funniest, most charming videos showed me that we have we have way more work to do than I ever thought. I think it's a fair assumption someone else had said that it's a fair assumption that because she looked way younger than the guy and she had a different ethnicity that she was the nanny. And then,
that's not real.
Roxane Gay replied, it's only a fair assumption if you're a racist.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Because realistically, first of all, in that video, I couldn't see her nearly clear enough to determine, A, how old or young she was, or B, what her actual race, could I tell she was Asian? Maybe, but that's not what I was really looking for.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not looking for the connection. I assumed it was just somebody trying to get these kids out of the room, whether it be a nanny or the mom or who knows, maybe it's his sister, who knows? You're like, and that's not the point to focus on. People just choose the most asinine things to.
Yeah, but I think that's Roxane Gay's point, though, is that it wasn't just people. It was media outlets like tabloids England
and
other websites saying, oh, well, isn't that embarrassing for the nanny? Well, she wasn't the nanny, and that she
it's
was actually the kid's
assumption.
Mom. But, I mean, you know, that's what people do in a tweet, or that's what people do on, you know, when they're writing these articles for newspapers or magazines.
Unfortunate.
You know, but... yeah.
Either way, it was funny.
Yeah,
the scenario was hilarious.
But it's interesting though that the minute that something does become funny, these bigger themes emerge. And Phil Yu, he's a blogger at this website called Angry Asian Man. He said that people are falling back on these stereotypes right away. That Asian women in particular are servile, passive. Or fulfilling some kind of service role, and then people were very quick to make that assumption,
right?
In especially in this case, because as we've said already, you know, he was sitting there in a coat and tie, and she wasn't, and she runs in there to grab the kids, right? So
yeah, it's unfortunate, but that's you know what people chose to take from that, but you know that's real life. And that's their real life.
But I think it speaks to the wider thing though of the of how quick people are to judge, and this goes to something we talked about last week about creep catchers, because we've heard this past weekend someone has actually sued the Surrey creep catcher guy for defamation because
that's bound to happen.
So I think that's why it's important we talk about how we talk about what we see on social media when it's a viral video,
sure.
A tweet, and sort, and the sort.
The perceptions of what other people's perceptions are.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see how those perspectives come out. One thing that I've noticed in particular lately, and I think we've touched on this kind of before, is all the ads lately with biracial couples.
Yeah.
And families. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, like Van City and
yeah.
I mean, American ads like Old Navy does that.
Yeah,
right?
Old Navy. Like I was going to say, even locally, like Van City, as you were saying. I mean, Van City even more so. They're just really pushing the envelope, right? Like they've got
same-sex couples.
Same-sex couples.
But do you think it's really pushing the envelope, or I mean,
you know what? I don't.
Yeah.
But from what we are typically used to seeing in mainstream media, on TV anyway, it's new. It's kind of refreshing. It's kind of like, wow, you guys have actually stepped into, like, 2017.
Yeah.
so it's nice to know that they are seeing what we see.
Yeah.
But it's almost like, what took you so long? Did it only become okay when another company made it okay and kind of took the brunt for everybody else before you guys decided to jump on the bandwagon?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I've always thought it was important for sitcoms, magazines, newspapers, television shows, television commercials in this case, to reflect the society that it is serving and the society that it is. I mean, we have in... I mean, I pulled this off of Breitbart, and I know we're not supposed to use that as a reliable source, but I mean, they said that 8.4% of the population in the United States is biracial. StatsCan says in Canada, and this was a stat from the summer, I saw this in the Vancouver Sun, mm-hmm. is 9.6% of I guess 9.6, I said, of marriages are biracial. And then the figure is 2.9% of the population are of biracial makeup. So I guess it shows that there are more people being married than are actually born, I suppose. Because but
and that's reassuring too.
But do you think it's reassuring in the sense that it reflects the community, or like in the Van City case, they were saying that because when they started having same-sex couples in their ads, that it was more a marketing ploy because they realized that...
Of course it's a marketing ploy. That's
We can get their money.
Yeah, of course. Well, yeah. I mean, that's what commercials are, right?
Yeah.
It's all about selling and trying to get your business. So it would only make sense as a company to speak to that wider audience of the business that you want to get, because surprise, gays and lesbians have money too,
and more money with. Because gay and lesbian couples don't have kids, and so you're talking about
right. Double
incomes there.
Exactly.
Rather
so that's
than say,
like, that's
yeah.
a good. Those are some prime rates that you want to hit up, right? Those are that's not a group that you want to exclude.
Yeah. But what does it say, though? I mean, do you think it says something to young people, though, who see this? Like, I always thought, like, I mean, regardless if you thought Barack Obama was a good or bad president, it was a wonderful thing to show children. And we've talked about that photo that I like
mm-hmm.
of the little kid who yep. wondered what Barack Obama's hair felt
hair
like,
because
it looked like his hair. And so when you see a guy like when a kid like that sees a guy whose hair is like his, he automatically thinks, well, I could be president one day. And so that does have an impact on the children who see the Cheerios ad or the Old Navy ad or the, you know.
I think it does. I think just as humans, I think internally, even just seeing it, it does, there's some sensory triggers that make us relate the two, right? So
normalizes it and things like that.
It normalizes it and it says to us, okay, they kind of, you know, they accept, you know, people like me. And it may not be the forefront of your thoughts when you're making that decision of where you want to bank or what, you know, what products you're going to buy, but subconsciously, I think it's absolutely there. And I think it's a positive, so why wouldn't you think of it?
And it's all subliminal because we don't watch, I mean, none of us watch television for the ads, right?
No.
We're on our phone, or we can hear the ads as we're waiting for the show to come back on.
Exactly.
Or we're walking back into the room after, you know, we got up when the commercial started, so.
And, I mean, it's just like, you know, Cheerios was one of the first ones that had the biracial couple and child in their commercial. And I have to say, I mean, I was never the biggest Cheerios fan to begin with. And I don't know that changed my mind about, you know, now I'm going to eat Cheerios. But it definitely brought them more to the forefront of my mind when I was out shopping or when I'd see their logo. Because they'd be like, oh, yeah, Cheerios, they're the ones that did that ad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. You know, and you remember that. So long as it's in the forefront of my memory, I may pick it up when I'm shopping. you know. So, yeah, I think subliminally the messages are there, and these companies are doing, they're just hitting a market that needs to be hit, and I think they've recognized the level of visibility that that's there, so.
And it's unfortunate that the marketers know that, but, I mean, journalists, like, I mean, Time Magazine, for example, talking about Professor Robert Kelly and his wife, referred to her as a frenzied nanny rather than who his wife is by her name, which they did later, which they clarified. But still, I mean, consumers are there, marketers are there, but a lot of people aren't. And this, we still have a long way to go, don't we?
Oh, yeah, we still have quite a long ways to go. You know, it's a little off topic, but, you know, we've had those recent threats of attack to the Jewish community center here in
Vancouver. Bomb threats, yeah.
And, I mean, I think that alone tells you how far we still have yet to go.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's unfortunate, but I think I'm optimistic and that I'm hoping that change will come soon, and with a new generation, hopefully there's new ears and eyes and little brains, you know, that are growing and full of knowledge to see what's happening now to hopefully make it better for them in the future. So
do you think in your kids' future you'll see females, because this came up last week in the news in Manhattan, in New York City, coaching, say, professional sports, because Greg Popovich, the coach of the San Antonio Spurs, he's recently hired a female assistant coach. And, and you looked her up. What's her name?
For the San Antonio Spurs,
Becky,
right?
Hammond, was it?
What was her name again?
Becky Hammond, right?
Becky Hammond.
Yeah, so she's a first full-time...
assistant coach.
Yeah.
Salaried female coach in NBA history.
Yeah, so on one of the sports talk stations in New York, Mike Francesa, who's the biggest name in sports talk in New York, at least, the tri-state area, he was asked on open line if let's say Popovich's job came open, would we have a female coach of the NBA or the NFL or the NHL or whatever professional sport? And he said no. And people were quick to jump on him and say, well, that's sexist and it's backward. You could very well have a coach. You couldn't. Francesa said you couldn't have a coach that was female coaching one of these sports.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Do you think it is? I mean, because those four sports in particular, Major League Baseball, hockey, football, and NBA, don't have female players.
No, but those are players.
Yeah.
And coaching is different. I mean, really, it's about taking direction. If you can play the sport, it shouldn't be a problem for you to take direction from someone, regardless if they're male or female.
But let's say the female hasn't played the sport, though, because there haven't been female players in those four leagues in particular, those four professional leagues.
Well, maybe not in the league professionally, but they may still have played. And, I mean, that's still... I mean, that's an equality that we still have to look at, just, you know, as a whole. But, you know, because we have women that play football. It may not be professional in the NFL, but they still understand the skill of the game. And, I mean, really, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not big in sports, so I don't know what makes a good coach.
Well, most of the coaches, though, like you think of hockey managers that we see, you know, because we live in Canada.
They're former players.
Yeah, they're former
right?
players, yeah. I mean, I would think that it would be hard for some male players to take direction from someone who didn't play the sport. Just as it would be difficult for them to take from a male who didn't play the sport either, right?
I think it's like a level of respect, too. I know even at work. It's not the same, but, you know, when you get somebody who comes in who knows nothing about
the job, and they're the manager,
the job,
right?
Right, and then they want to try and tell you how to do your job. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
Nobody's really taken that.
Yeah. But I mean, you think of like Serena Williams or Venus Williams, if they were like a tennis coach of like men.
For men.
I think that would be very easy because they
yeah,
know that
sure.
these are accomplished women who have played the game and done very well at the game. I think we can
and
listen
do you
to
think
them.
They would get the same respect from those men. Do
oh,
you think?
I would think so because if you're a male wanting to do well in tennis, who better than to have these two or one of the two tell you how to play the game?
You
because they've done so,
so
well.
You would think so, but I assume there would probably be some that have issues with that.
I would think there would be more issues with NFL players or NBA players, you know, where because you hear this all the time, you know, the domestic violence and
right.
violence,
yeah,
in general, gun violence and the sort, to take a woman seriously, perhaps.
This is true.
You know, even just misogyny, you just think of just how,
well,
you know.
Yeah, the misogyny is... Yeah, misogyny is a funny thing, and sometimes, you know, when you're a female amongst, or when you're one female amongst many men, sometimes there's those subtle undertones that you don't necessarily see, or what we call them, microaggressions.
Mm.
I know what that's like to work with, so I could assume even as a female coach, you'd be dealing with that.
Yeah. So what do you do then often. When you encounter it at work? Do you call it out every time?
Well, you know, this is the thing, because they are, like, microaggressions, and these are the things that you don't, it's like sometimes the worst, because it's almost like you don't have any control, because you don't recognize it until after the fact, right?
Mm.
Many times you're in a situation, and you don't particularly see it until later when you get home or you're...
Someone else tells you, right?
Someone else tells you. Well, typically it's been me reanalyzing the situation.
Yeah.
And then when I look back at other situations put together, it comes together and it's like, yeah, you know, there's slight little microaggressions. There's some misogyny here that I didn't think was there before, but now that I've put the pieces together, I absolutely see it. And it's unfortunate, because it's like, had my eyes been open to that, I would have maybe dealt with that situation differently.
So then is it too late then at that point when you reanalyze?
For me, in a particular situation, yeah. I mean, it's not like I can come back to them 10 minutes later and say, hey, you guys were being mean and blah. But what I can do is organize, and now I'm aware of who these people are. And like in any case, you organize so that you can do better next time.
Yeah.
And be prepared to deal with it, I guess, a little better next time.
Yeah.
The only, what do they say, the worst hit is usually the one you're not expecting, right?
Mm.
So if you can expect it and prepare, you're that much more ready.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the world needs to be a little more open-minded too.
We've got a long way to go though, as far as we can tell, right?
Well, it looks like it. With yeah. race, with sex, with
gender.
Yeah.
Well, we'll keep talking about it, I guess, and start next week again.
Well, we've got a lifetime for that, right? So.
Yeah.
That's Two Peas in a Podcast from Monday, March 13th, 2017.
In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.
And I'm Jackie Pierre. We'll be back in 7 days.